Hello and welcome into this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and hopefully a bit of absurdity on this Thursday, the 18th day of June, 2020. I hope you're well, that your loved ones are well, and that life is relatively sane for you where you are. If you live in Atlanta, that might be a little difficult today. Yesterday evening, as my wife and I were winding down from the day, I sat with my iPad, as I usually do, looking for things to talk about for the next day, and I began to see on Twitter little notes popping up about police not showing up for work in Atlanta, Georgia, as a result of the sentencing of a couple of police officers involved in a shooting there. I think we're all familiar with the story about the shooting. And I can go back over it, I guess, but I don't know that I need to. But something bizarre is happening in Atlanta right now, and it all boils down to one thing. One thing, and only one thing. Many factors play into it. There are many facets to this particular gem. But what it all boils down to is politics. Political advantage. The lust for power and control. And that's what it boils down to. A leftist, a liberal, a progressive Democrat candidate in a runoff election, grandstanding for the press in hopes of swaying the vote in his favor by angering a segment of the population of his county. That's what it all boils down to. But we'll get into that more in just a bit, because honestly, it's disgusting. And if you, my friend, are an Atlantan, you live in Fulton County, Georgia, I encourage you. I encourage you in the strongest terms possible to get off of your duff and go vote in this runoff election. Because the man who has done what's caused all of these problems in Atlanta, Georgia, with the police, needs to be removed from office for multiple reasons. But first, yesterday, not much else happened around our place yesterday. Life around here was basically normal. I got out for a little while. I didn't have outside sessions, but I did have errands to run. So I did some errand running, and the plan was to come back to the house and do some more car work. And yesterday, as I was crossing from one place to another, it became obvious that it was going to rain where I was going to be working on a car. And I have to do it outdoors because there's no space indoors for this particular vehicle because it's too large. So I canceled my plans and retreated to the studio and got online and started looking around at things and gathering up information. So yesterday was, aside from, what did I do? I put a belt, a deck belt on a lawnmower, a riding lawnmower. This is just nuts, isn't it? This is just my life yesterday. This is what happened to me. This was my day. It was just a dull day yesterday. I put a belt on a lawnmower. I tried to lubricate the windows on our little Miata so they'd run up and down a little faster. And sadly, I think I have a bad motor or something on one window, and it just can't handle the load anymore. And it's going to cost me some bucks to replace the motor. Such is life. But and that was really about all I got accomplished, aside from having to crank up both garage doors and kick on the fan to get rid of all the smoke from when I ran the motor for just a couple of minutes. Yeah, that little car's producing a lot of smoke. It's burning a lot of oil, and that's something that's got to happen in the future, but I can't do it right now. Just not enough money coming in. to spend on the Miata to get the engine rebuilt. But that was yesterday. And then this thing with this press conference happened, and everything started turning upside down. It was just bizarre. Now, before we move forward into other things, let's take a look at that press conference. A former Atlanta police officer is facing felony charges after the fatal shooting of Rayshard Brooks in a Wendy's parking lot last week. Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard. Fulton County, if you're not in Georgia or not around Georgia, Fulton County is where Atlanta is. Basically, Atlanta is almost the whole county. But Fulton County DA Paul Howard announced the charges against Garrett Roth, who was fired over the weekend. Roth is facing 11 counts. 11. Yeah, you heard me. Including felony murder and assault with a deadly weapon. Roth's partner, who was present during Brooks' shooting, Devin Brosnan, is facing 3 charges and has been placed on administrative leave, according to the Wall Street Journal. Roth killed Brooks late Friday night after responding to a call from a Wendy's employee that a man had fallen asleep behind the wheel in his car in the drive-thru and was obstructing traffic. The officers ran Brooks through a field sobriety test and a breathalyzer that pegged Brooks' blood alcohol concentration at 0.108, according to body cam footage released by the Atlanta Police Department. The legal limit is 0.08. 0.08. He was at 0.108. After cooperating for nearly half an hour, Brooks fought with the officers as they tried to place him in handcuffs. All 3 struggled and fell to the ground, where Brooks managed to take Brosnan's taser and escape the officers. Roth shot it after Brooks fired the stolen taser at him. If you watch the cell phone video that's been released, you can see that he was actually pursuing him with a taser in hand. He was going after Brooks with a taser until Brooks fired the other taser at him, at which point he reached for his duty weapon. Roth and Brosnan responded to the charges in statements given by their respective attorneys. Quote, the decision to initiate charges by the Fulton County DA's office is irrational and obviously based on factors which should have nothing to do with the proper administration of justice. This was not a rush to judgment. This was a rush to misjudgment. Officer Roth is well known to the courts, and there is no compelling reason to bring any charges against them before the GBI has completed its investigation and published its findings. That's another factor, by the way. The Georgia Bureau of Investigations was unaware this was going to happen. The press conference, because they were still working on their investigation. Brooks' shooting sparked protests in the city of Atlanta. Local officials criticized, cracked down on the officers involved. Atlanta Police Chief Erica Shields resigned Saturday over the incident. And again, as I mentioned to you before, the reason that Erica Shields resigned was because the shooting was just, and politicians over her head were insisting that she fire the officer. The politicians were thinking politically, not legally. The politicians in Fulton County, in Atlanta, were thinking about the repercussions. They were trying to go for a comfortable solution rather than a lawful solution. This is what happens when progressives are in charge. They look for what appears to be the most soothing and kind and trustworthy solution, when in fact, the legal solution is far from that. And as a result, they create an atmosphere that produces more illegal activity. This is progressivism. Hi. Let's see. Shields said, for more than 2 decades, I've served alongside some of the finest men and women in the Atlanta Police Department. Out of a deep and abiding love for this city and this department, I offered to step aside as police chief. APD has my full support. Mayor Bottoms has my support on the future direction of this department. I have faith in the mayor, and it's time for the city to move forward and build trust between law enforcement and the communities they serve. A day later, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms said that Brooks' killing was murder. Bottoms' sharp criticism of police officers' conduct comes amid nationwide protests and riots over police brutality, yada, yada, yada. Murder. Let me just say something about that word. Murder is something which is an accusation which must be proved in a court of law. The word murder is being tossed around a lot nowadays. In the case of George Floyd, people in conservative media, both in the mainstream, in conservative, such as Fox News, and those who are web-centered, I guess is the best way to put it, people who have websites and blogs and radio shows and the like, these people are using the word murder in conjunction with what happened to George Floyd. And they are using the word murder with what happened in Atlanta. In neither case has there been a determination that this was murder. Neither case. They have not determined that either one of these cases was actually murder. Homicide, yes. One person killed another. Whether it was intentional or not, whether it was premeditated or not, whether it classifies as murder or not, has not been determined. Why? Because investigations are ongoing, determinations must be made, the court must make this decision. But politicians prefer the court of public opinion. Politicians prefer that minds be made up in advance of the legal process. And progressive politicians, particularly, want people to think the worst, so when the worst is not decided in the legal process, there can be an uprising and anger, and the politicians can step in and be the hero. So the word murder is being used. I am deeply disappointed that conservative people are using the word murder in both of these cases, because murder has not been determined. Death, yes. Homicide, yes. Murder, no. It has not been decided. So when you hear someone say George Floyd was murdered, when you hear people say that Rayshard Brooks was murdered, keep in mind that has not been determined as yet. We've all seen video of both of these situations. What we know is that black men died when they were in an engagement with police in two different instances. In Atlanta, we saw a black man take a weapon from a cop. We saw a black man resist arrest and fight with the police and take a weapon, and while fleeing, turn and fire that weapon at a pursuing police officer. Oh, but Mark, a taser's not a deadly weapon. Really? The Fulton County DA 2 weeks ago said it was. Do a little web search. You'll find the video. The same district attorney, the same one, said publicly in front of God and everybody that a taser was a deadly weapon. Apparently, it's only a deadly weapon in the hands of a police officer. But when a fleeing felon, yes, a felon, something you may not know is that Rayshard Brooks was out of prison basically because of the coronavirus. One of the people who were released to thin the crowds to minimize the chances of infection. This guy actually was supposed to be in prison. And so when he realized handcuffs were about to be put on him, he swung into action and fought to keep from going back to prison. And then he fought with these cops, stole a taser, and fired on them. And the district attorney says it's murder. Felony murder. This is a shameless, shameless abuse of power It's a shameless political ploy. Because District Attorney Paul Howard is in a runoff election in Fulton County. He's fighting for his political career. He's grandstanding and hoping to stir up people and get enough votes in his favor so that he can maintain his political position. And that's all that's happening. Make no mistake, we're watching police officers being sacrificed for the career of a politician. And that's what's happening in Atlanta, Georgia, right now. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Tuesday or a Thursday or someday. I forget. It's a Thursday, the 18th of June, 2020. I was just scanning through social media and ran across an article from the Daily Mail. I'll include this in today's show notes, by the way. In fact, the reason I'm just a little distracted is because I am copying and pasting the address even as I speak. And I will put this right there. There we go. Rayshard Brooks was on probation for four crimes, including cruelty to children. Cruelty to children. And he faced going back to prison if charged with a DUI. That's when he was found asleep and intoxicated at a Wendy's drive-thru. Yes. And I'll include that in the show notes today so that you can see. I'm not just talking off the top of my head. He was actually out on probation and would have gone back to prison had the DUI arrest gone forward. And that is why he fought with the police. This is why he took a cop's taser and fired it at the cop. And that is why he is dead today. And as a result of all this going on, the blue flu has hit Atlanta. Lots of police officers call out sick after the charges were filed. As I mentioned, I saw this starting to pop up as I was looking at social media last night. Reports about different zones around Atlanta. Zone 6 on the... did you know that you can actually go listen to police scanners online? Yeah, they're available online. So the police scanner for Zone 6 in Atlanta, very quiet, extremely quiet, much more quiet than usual last night because nobody was taking any calls. They were not responding. Some just sat in their cars in the parking lot. The Atlanta police, of course, early on were saying, the department's experiencing a higher than usual number of call-outs with the incoming shift, suggestions that multiple officers from the department's different zones walked off the job. That's not accurate. But despite that denial, CNN said multiple sources in the Atlanta Police Department were saying that Atlanta police officers are not responding to calls in three different zones. There's six police zones in the city. Police radio traffic, largely quiet in multiple zones of Atlanta. Regional Director Vince Champion told the Police Tribune, he's with the police union. He said, "We've heard that in at least three zones, the officers have actually walked out. We don't know the number. We've heard that in one precinct, the officers are in the precinct building, but will not come out unless an officer calls for assistance." That's something I saw on Twitter last night as well. He goes on to say, "We're also hearing that some precincts are reporting that officers are just sitting in their personally owned vehicles in the parking lot." The other thing is that the city has already tried to reach out, that I know of, to two counties right adjacent to us, Cobb County and Gwinnett County, and those counties have said, no, they won't help. They were trying to get county sheriffs from adjacent counties to come in and help. And they said they're not going to put their officers at risk of being fired or arrested. Department spokesman Sergeant Chaffee, while acknowledging the numerous call-outs, said the department has enough resources to be able to respond to incidents throughout the city and maintain regular operations. Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms addressed the issue in an appearance on CNN, saying that she didn't have an exact count of the officers who'd called out, but, quote, what I do know is that we do have enough officers to cover us through the night, and our streets won't be any less safe because of the number of officers who called out. Seems like the talking points were distributed. When Chris Cuomo at CNN pressed her for more details, she said the city would receive additional law enforcement help from county and state agencies and added she was concerned about repairing morale among officers. Yeah, she should be. She should rein her DA in. Wow. County and state agencies. By the way, I saw tweets last night saying they were both saying, shaking their heads saying, no, you're on your own. Unless an officer's down, we're not coming. And that's basically the gist of the story from last night. Today, hard to say what's going to happen today. That's up in the air. By the way, let's see. Where is that story? Do I have it in the thing here? No, I don't. So let me go back over here. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation released a statement that appeared to contradict what the Attorney General told reporters about acting in concert with the state investigative agency. So essentially, the attorney or the DA was lying to the press. The GBI, quote, was not aware of today's press conference before it was conducted. We were not consulted on the charges filed by the district attorney. Despite today's occurrence, the GBI will complete its mission of completing an impartial and thorough investigation of this incident, and we will submit the file, once completed, to the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. So, the district attorney stepped out, as I said, when you know all of the particulars, it's obvious that this was a politically motivated press conference, that he was getting on TV in front of everybody and being Mr. Tough Guy and dealing with this rogue cop for the good of the people of Atlanta and charging him with felony murder. 11 different counts of different things, picking all this stuff apart, finding all these things to charge him with. Why? To make people, the black people of Fulton County, happy with him so that he would win in the upcoming, in this runoff election. That's why. There is no other reason. When you consider that the GBI was caught blindsided, had no idea he was going to make this announcement without any sort of corroboration or foundation, that this district attorney was going to make this determination without evidence from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, it's obvious what he's up to. Speaking of investigations and the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, it's a story from a few weeks ago in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. The GBI opened an investigation of Fulton County District Attorney Paul Howard and his use of a nonprofit to funnel at least $140,000 in City of Atlanta funds to supplement his salary. The criminal investigation comes at a time when Howard, their DA there since 1997, is being challenged in the Democratic primary for re-election and is facing allegations of sexual harassment, which he strongly denies, because of course. And a statement issued, this is from May, when is this, this story? May 4th. So this is 6 weeks or so ago. In a statement, Howard predicted he will be cleared of any wrongdoing. Quote, this is not the first time what would be considered as an administrative matter for other Georgia elected officials is turned over to the GBI for investigation when it involves the Fulton County District Attorney In other words, he's the victim here. This is racial, is what he's saying. This is also in reference to the agency's investigation in 2014 of him and his use of money forfeited by criminals to pay for galas and dinners for his staff and their families. In that probe, prompted by media reports, he says, "I was totally exonerated." As for the ongoing investigation, he says, "If the facts are followed, it is my expectation that the result will be exactly the same." He says the timing of this investigation, weeks away from the June 9 primary, is not lost on him. So, taking this into consideration, the fact that he's running in a runoff election, he has an opportunity to put himself in the public eye and look like a hero for the black community. The district attorney, Paul Howard, of Fulton County, Georgia, is willing to sacrifice the life and the career of a police officer for political gain. It's disgusting behavior. And the people of Georgia need to understand what this man's doing. He's grandstanding for the press so he can win a runoff election. And he's willing to sacrifice the life of a police officer to do it. Apparently, today the computer likes Michael Jackson. All right. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, the 18th day of June, 2020. Good to have you along. Thank you so much for being there. I appreciate the fact that you are every day. Faithful podcast listeners, my apologies for mislabeling yesterday's podcast. I mean, if you looked at your listing and said, "Well, I don't see anything for Wednesday at all. All I see is Monday. And you know why? It's because I mislabeled yesterday's. Part of the process I go through every day, I copy and paste the titling for each one of them from the day before, just change the day and the date. That way, I'm not timing out the whole I know it's a little thing, but, you know, little things add up to bigger things and more time and such. And so I've got windows open, copying and pasting and moving along. And in the process yesterday of uploading the podcast to the podcast hosting service, Castos, I had to upload it five times yesterday. I was thinking, I didn't want to exaggerate. It was five times before it showed up. And it was really strange because I would upload it and I would get this error message telling me that my time had expired. And I knew my time hadn't expired. I knew that was not the case, but it kept giving me error messages. And I finally figured out or tried a way to upload it that it stuck and everything worked. And in the process, I was so relieved. Oh, good. Save. Whew, I'm out of here. Let me go work on stuff. And I didn't change the day and date. And so it uploaded as another Monday podcast. And so that was the error. So my apologies. It's there now. So if you want to go listen to yesterday, it's there now. Oh my gosh. Everybody is ticked off about everything. We're behaving like a bunch of little children. "Well, you said nasty things about me. Oh, he wrote a bad thing about me." You know what? Grow up, America. Just grow up and stop acting like little children who want someone to come in and fight for you. Grow up. On ABC's This Week over the weekend, HUD Secretary Ben Carson had pretty much the same argument. He argued against rewriting history to erase parts of it that are found to be offensive. Carson argued society needs to grow up and stop renaming things because of the racial history. George Stephanopoulos over on ABC asked, "The president's convention acceptance speech is scheduled for Jacksonville on August 27th. A KKK mob attacked mostly black civil rights protesters. Is it appropriate to have a convention speech on that anniversary in that city? Carson responded, "You know, we've reached a point in our society where we dissect everything and try to ascribe some nefarious notion to it. We really need to move away from that. We need to move away from being offended by everything, of going through history and looking at everything, of renaming everything. I mean, I think about the fact that some of our universities, some of our prestigious universities, have a relationship with the slave trade. Should we go and rename those universities? You know, it really gets to a point of being ridiculous after a while. And, you know, we have to grow up as a society." Ben Carson, who grew up in poverty, worked his way to become one of the top surgeons in the world, is considered a great mentor and role model for young people who need someone to look up to. Later in that interview, Stephanopoulos tried another gotcha question. He asked Carson about the comments made by President Trump last week, where he said on Fox News he's arguably been one of the best presidents for African Americans. Quite a claim there from President Trump. Done more for black Americans than any president since Lincoln. Do you stand by that claim? Carson responds, "Well, I will say, rather than get into an argument about who's done the most, what has in fact been done, you know, the opportunity zones where they've designed in, they're designed in order to bring money into areas that are traditionally neglected. That's been quite successful. Prison reform has been quite successful. It's just the first step." Carson responded, ignoring the question, and instead listing Trump administration accomplishments for minority communities. Making funding for the HBCUs regular rather than done on an annual basis and increasing the amount of money for that, that's been very useful, he said. There are other things that need to be done, all of which is a significant part of our history. And that's an important thing for us to acknowledge. What has happened in the past, and, you know, we should be willing to look at what we've done together collectively to make progress. And he's right. It occurred to me when I read the article, this is a guy who came from a background where he could have crossed his arms, stuck his lip out, and said, "I'm poor because of someone else and I just can't make it in life." But he ignored all of that and pursued his goal. And in the pursuit of that goal, he succeeded against all odds. And by doing so, he proved that your current circumstances don't necessarily determine your future. That you can make your mind up to move up and away. And as a result, you can succeed. And when you see people saying, "We're being held back by this," or we're being held back by that, think about Ben Carson. Think about this man who is an example, because he, among others, has been successful in spite of the narrative which says everything is biased, that there is systemic racism woven into the fabric of our nation, that black people cannot succeed because of racism in America today. Well, I would dare say that Ben Carson stands in stark contrast to that thought. And by the way, so does Oprah Winfrey. So do many other people. Black people who are successes in America today. The head of the BET television network. A billionaire. Black people. Aunt Jemima comes to mind. The woman whose picture was on the Aunt Jemima syrup bottles and pancake mix. Not her real name, but the woman behind that had a great pancake recipe, had other great recipes, had a good little thing going. General Mills bought that and paid her for the use of her image. And she ended up becoming one of the first black millionaires in America. She ignored the circumstances, and she succeeded. Someone else who did, a guy named Herschel Walker, That name ring a bell? Former NFL running back? Herschel Walker made an offer. He's offered to work with airlines to send people who want to defund the police to countries without police. Walker played 12 years in the NFL. He took his thoughts to Twitter in response to people who want to eliminate police departments across the United States. Quote, I have an idea for all these people who don't want any police. I'd love to meet with American Airlines, Delta, and Southwest and make a deal to fly them to countries that don't have police. I want them to be happy. Good for him. On Sunday, Walker said he would volunteer to serve as a black leader to help bring members of Congress together with leaders from all ethnic groups, both left and right, to find solutions. He said, we're civilized people. Why can't true congressmen and women and senators get together with leaders from all ethnic groups, both left and right, to find solutions? Unless certain people in Washington don't want to see change. I'm volunteering myself as one of the black leaders. Walker also recently retweeted his son, Christian, on Twitter, who said he doesn't feel bad for the people who are looting and burning down buildings during the nationwide protests. Quote, my dad grew up in the Deep South as a poor black man and turned himself into a notable athlete, businessman, and person. No, I don't feel bad for oppressed, quote, oppressed people who run around burning buildings down. I'm not sorry. I'm grateful for my country. The opportunities it's given me. And that young man is going to succeed. Because his daddy's rich? No. Because he's right. That young man will succeed because he sees things clearly and not through the eyes of radical leftist anger, which is what's happening in America today. It's a very sad thing to see people believe the lies of leftism when they could make a choice and turn against the tide and swim the other direction or swim to the shore and get out of that current completely. There's a religious term for changing your mind and taking a different course. The word is repentance. That's what the word repent means. It means to change your mind, to change the way you think, to set your feet on a different path, and to walk a different way, rather than following along with what was heading you down to the depths of despair and failure. You make up your mind, this is not for me. I'm heading a different direction. And that's what it means to repent. And I would say that there are many people in America who need to repent of their defeatism, of their acceptance of failure, of their adherence to the status quo, and they need to change their direction. It's a decision. It's a choice. It can be done. And there are many, many examples of people who have done so. I've just mentioned two or three here. Ben Carlson, Herschel Walker, his son Christian, Oprah Winfrey. They've ignored the circumstances and just pressed forward and pursued what they knew they wanted to do with their lives. And as a result, they became successful. When everybody around them was probably telling them, you know, as a black guy, you've got no chance of making this happen because everything's stacked against you and the system is inherently racist. It'll never happen. But even though that was the word, they ignored it. They changed their mind and changed their lives. I think after the show today, going to grab a cup of coffee, sit down and have a heart-to-heart talk with the computer about how it schedules music. I mean, I know I wrote into the rules artist something about artist separation. I mean, I don't want... There should be a couple of days before another Michael Jackson. Apparently, something needs rebooting and convincing. It is the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. I can't deny it, though. I like the music. Okay. What can I say? Here we go. Come on. Oh, yeah. It's fading out. Well, there we go. It is a it's a Thursday edition of the podcast. I'm a little disconnected today. I don't know if you can tell. There is some fresh hell in the air, and I don't know what it is, but it's not making my sinuses happy. Oh, man, oh, man. It's not coronavirus. I know that because I don't have any of those symptoms. And even though the politicians, the leftist politicians and the news media, the leftist news media would love for us to live in fear, I think it's very convenient that these warnings about gatherings and things suddenly popped back up again after the president decided to start holding rallies again. What? Are you insane? Yeah, because we just can't have that. We have to put the attention off of this and back on fear. People need to be afraid again. Well, in an op-ed published on Tuesday in the Wall Street Journal, Vice President Mike Pence slammed the media for stirring up panic and attempting to scare people about a second coronavirus wave. Yeah, that's another thing. The second wave. Yeah, it's coming to kill everybody. Did you know that? Quote, in recent days, the media has taken to sounding the alarm bells over a second wave of coronavirus infections. Such panic is overblown. Thanks to the leadership of President Trump and the courage and compassion of the American people, our public health system is far stronger than it was 4 months ago, and we're winning the fight against the invisible enemy. He's right about that, you know. All of the things that everybody was panicked over and scrambling about, face masks for the people in the hospitals, respirators, and such, it's all in place now. It's all there. We're very well prepared, and we know much, much more about the coronavirus than we did at the beginning. The vice president was responding to a spree of media reports in the last week of a coronavirus case spike occurring across the Sun Belt and in the western region of the country. The New York Times reported Sunday that 22 states, including Texas, Arizona, and Florida, have experienced an increase in confirmed cases since reopening. In another report on Wednesday, the Washington Post added that 9 states have hit record highs in the last week. What do those two newspapers have in common, the New York Times and the Washington Post? They are hard-left, liberal, Democrat-aligned newspapers. They both repeatedly have been caught publishing stories with no basis in fact for political advantage for the left. Pence wrote in his op-ed, quote, while talk of an increase in cases dominates cable news coverage, more than half of states are actually seeing cases decline or remain stable. It should also be noted that many state and local leaders knew an increase in cases might follow as a result of reopening, but determined the economic risks of remaining in lockdown outweighed the possibility of new infections. Something you should also keep in mind is that the New York Times and the Washington Post and other sources like them are not reporting that we're seeing more cases because there's more testing. They're also not reporting that the death rate is dropping, consistently dropping. So we're seeing more cases. We're learning that more people have had it, and the death rate is falling. But they're not giving you the complete picture from the leftist press. It's not happening. Why? Fear and anxiety. That's why. Fear and anxiety. That's another reason that everybody wants you to wear a mask, because they want that symbol of fear to remind everybody, without the government, we're all going to die. The new surge in confirmed cases also coincides with nationwide protests over George Floyd's death in Minneapolis. The White House Coronavirus Task Force warned governors last week to prepare for such a spike. Nevertheless, Pence argued that the goal of slowing the spread so as not to overwhelm the health system has been obtained. And remember, that was the reason for 15 days to slow this, to change the curve or whatever it was called. Remember, that was the reason, was for the healthcare industry, for the healthcare workers. We were going to do this to keep from overwhelming them. That was successful. Quote, the media has tried to scare the American people every step of the way. And these grim predictions of a second wave are no different. The truth is, whatever the media says, our whole of America approach has been a success. We've slowed the spread. We've cared for the most vulnerable. We've saved lives, and we've created a solid foundation for whatever challenges we may face in the future. That's a cause for celebration, not the media's fear-mongering. The latest data from Johns Hopkins University shows that the United States has reported more than 2 million confirmed cases of the virus since the start of the outbreak, more than 117,000 deaths. But the initial predictions were for over 2 million. The fearmongers said millions of people would die. That never came about. It just didn't happen. And when we depend on the management of progressive leaders, terrible things happen, regardless of what the scenario is. But in this scenario, the coronavirus, we see that sick people, people with the coronavirus, were sent back into nursing homes or dispatched to nursing homes for care and resulted in infecting seniors in nursing homes. And many died. Nursing home deaths may have accounted for as many as 40% of all coronavirus-related deaths in the United States. 40%. More than 50,000 of the nearly 117,000 deaths the country suffered over the past several months. That's according to an analysis by the Wall Street Journal. The paper wrote on Tuesday, a Wall Street Journal tally of state data compiling fatalities from COVID-19, the disease caused by the virus, underscores the virus's heavy cost to those living in long-term care facilities. Deaths among senior care centers, staff, and residents appear to represent at least 40% of the overall count of more than 116,000 U.S. fatalities related to COVID-19 as compiled by Johns Hopkins University. That's not the only shocking statistic. Around 250,000 nursing home residents, caregivers, and other employees contracted the coronavirus over the course of the pandemic, meaning that nursing homes accounted for nearly 25% of all American COVID-19 infections. Of those 250,000, an estimated 50,919 died, and that could simply be the tip of the iceberg. For many states, reporting on data on COVID-19 deaths lags by several weeks. In other states like Michigan, information about nursing home coronavirus infections not readily available. The bottom line, in these blue states where they decided to send people back into nursing homes or to not properly provide for nursing homes, seniors died needlessly. And it also points to the fact that the people who were the most susceptible and most horribly affected by the coronavirus were our seniors. And that the younger you are, the less likely it is that you'll suffer any kind of ill effects, long-term ill effects, unless you have some sort of underlying condition. And one of the things that we have learned that I spoke of a while ago, one of the things that we've learned is that we should protect those who are the most susceptible and push forward with life as normal as much as possible. We also learned that shutting down the economy wasn't necessary. What we should have done was protected the most vulnerable and kept pushing our economy forward. But The economy is coming back. The loss of life has been terrible. And probably higher than it should have been because we did things the wrong way. But we know better now. So let's press forward and do things the right way from now on. And that's it for today. Have a great Thursday. Let's get back together tomorrow morning for the Friday edition. How about that? We'll see you then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.